if you were seeing the world in that way, did you also feel and expect, and what did you think about the idea that you would go into the family business?
At that time, well, specifically in those years before graduation, I wasn't certain, because I was also thinking about medicine, being a physician, and that was based on particularly my junior year, when I stumbled onto something in an advanced biology course, zoology course, where I read a paper and did histology on how progesterone affects estrogen in the female and determines it changes them. That wasn't even in the textbook. Yeah. And I just thought that was fascinating, and I did slides on animal.
That was absolutely the research front.
Yeah, but that intrigued me, and I was able, I had selected my major then, I'm sure of that, which was if I did well, I could get into graduate school, medical school, physiological chemistry and bacteriology, which were taught over there. But they were first year graduates. But is that enough detail? I was on the fence, because the company didn't have a research department, didn't have anything that would seem to me wasn't that offered an opportunity.
What did your father think about your being on the fence?
He didn't like it. He wanted me to come into business.
So
and unfortunately had two operations, and those two operations convinced him that, well, he talked to me about coming back. I was then, I guess, the second one was, must have been my senior year, and they felt I had to cut short, and I had been to one manufacturer's meeting along the way and had an exposure, but no, he wanted his oldest son to,
and you
thought I was qualified, and you know,
you were a little ambivalent about it.
No, until his operation, in those days, operations were pretty serious. One was gallbladder and the other was, but they were in the hospital for a long time. And, you know, hard to control fever and they hard. And, no, I was concerned, and it was bread and butter. We were an affluent family. And, so, I talked about a quick course in pharmacy, and pharmacology was my idea. They didn't know about pharmacology in the company, and simultaneously working in the company. And for that reason, I went to a meeting of a manufacturing group in 37, I guess, when they were discussing the Wheeler-Lee Act and the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act at industry with the FDA and with members of Commerce. It was an open type of discussion. But the American pharmaceutical manufacturers were selling only to dispensing physicians. I mean, there was an American drug manufacturers that were selling prescriptions. And Merck was in, for instance, in that group. Merck had taken over Sharp and Dohme about that time, or I guess they didn't take over until 38, I have to check on that. But the point being, there were two groups, and I understood just what they were talking about when they said there was the need, and unfortunately in 35 there is the elixir of self-anonymous tragedy.
Yes. Well, looking back on it, it was a wonderful moment for a knowledgeable young man to come into this particular
never be one again
territory. Yes. Did you have any time pre-World War II now, when you're there, you're going to the College of Pharmacy, you're working with the firm, did you have any time at all for a social life?
Very little. Very little, but I, as you know, you can stay up late and I would do that and ski in the winter, skied with this fellow Ed Wonder in the Poconos. Your relationship with the gals was not as intense as it is today, so therefore you could have a good time with them and say goodnight and go home.
Best that for your work the next day, right?
Where did you live? Were you living with your parents?
Yes. We moved to 8917 Creefeld Street in after my grandfather died for a reason. Because my grandfather and grandmother were living in the Fairfax Apartments in Germantown, and she came to live with us, and we needed a larger house because they did give me a free, and my brother, you see, and we went to move from Germantown to 8917 Creefeld Street, north of Germantown in Chestnut Hill. But it was there that I lived. When I went to College of Pharmacy and started work, and my mother unfortunately came down with multiple sclerosis, and my father couldn't lift her, and I made a deal that as long as I returned that night and was there in case anything happened, that I would live there at home. Now, she unfortunately had, you know Wendell Garrett, by any chance, you ever seen him, or Antiques? Yeah. She was at that stage, and yet mentally good.
Yeah.
Just like Wendell.
Oh, he's the
good
guy
friend
on Antiques Roadshow?
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Is he on Antiques Roadshow, Wendell Garrett?
Yeah. He's right. The one in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Right.
That
right.
Even this week we saw him out in the West Coast, I forget where, Sacramento, and
right.
Last week we down there.
He's the best.
You like him?
Yeah.
One of my closest friends.
Okay. When did your mother die?
Well, mother and dad died in the same year, 68, within 2 months of each other. But when
so
I
this went
married,
on a long time.
I married at 41. I moved out, of course, and then they closed up the house and it went to the presidential apartment and lived there until.
Let's just go sideways. We haven't talked on tape at all about how you met Mrs. McNeil and so on. Can you just
I'm going to be very brief because I know that what I say and what I permit you see to go on a record, simply say that I knew Dr. McKinney and his son Walter McKinney from the St. Andrew's Society, and also another brother-in-law, but I never had met Nancy McKinney. But upon the urging of friends, I went out to meet her, and then after wrecking my back, decided I'd better get married. For the third time, I have two vertebrae discs. I was shot, one in college football and one a minor accident in 1950, and was in traction in Mayo, and I was in a brace. The first weekend that this won't be repeated, the first weekend, and I'm relying on you to watch the time. The first weekend that I went to visit her down in Avalon, I played against two Cornell tennis team guys with another fellow that I knew well, with me, played with me. And they lobbed over his head, and I went around in a squash shot. Didn't get it, and I twisted my back, even though I had a brace on, and I went into traction for the third time, which meant I had to lie flat. You know, they tied up your foot in those days, so you would relax and stretch, and the disc would slip back. Well, then went to Mayo again, and that was the fall. Unless they fused five vertebrae, they couldn't do what Balderson did a few days ago, and that is put in a prosthetic disc, because one leg was numb. And so I was through, and that convinced me that she was a widow living with her family, and part that I won't say with that on is, she had a son, 6-year-old, and I'll say no more. I decided I better get married. Then we had 3 children alone.
Who were born in which years?
2 years afterwards, we were 56, 58. Married in 56. Vicki was born 2 years later in 58. Jody 2 years later. And Rory 3 years later.
And the fact that your wife came from a physician's family meant that she had at least some idea of what you were up to.
She knew I was, at that point, I had been president of associations and meetings on the ACS board. You see, at night, I had to give up like that. I had to give up all of that.
Go back there. Did you, with groups like the ACS, Philadelphia Scientific Life before World War II, was it the ACS section? Was that the main thing, or where did you go?
Glenn, I think, Elliot was responsible for getting me to be a member of the board of the Philadelphia section of the American Chemical Society. But at the same time, I'd been president of the American Pharmaceutical Association Philadelphia branch, and also the drug exchange, which was in Philadelphia, which was then a very active group.
What was that?
Well, that was a combination of people from the marketing side, supply side, manufacturing side, dispensing side, and selling side in the Philadelphia area, like a chamber of commerce that was concerned only with the problems of the drug industry. And the drug industry ran it, meaning my vice presidents were moved right up, and they were all from the six. There were 3 large manufacturers and 3 small. Merck, who had then merged with Sharp & Doan, Smith, Kline & French, and Wyeth. Those were the 3 large. And McNeil, Rohr, and National Drug were the 3 active small groups.
What was National Drug? I don't know.
Well, they were taken over. You know, National Drug was in Germantown, but they were doing essentially the same business as McNeil and Rohr. Charles McAllister was the president of National Drug Company. And at that time, Jerry Rohr, or Herb Rohr first, and Jerry Rohr were the 2 heads of the Rohr Company. And Herb had been head of the drug exchange ahead of me. We alternated. The next guy followed me was a Smith Kleiner. Today it's a social club.
I think I went to one of their meetings.
It still goes on.
Yes, down on Independence Square, they had their meetings there, but they become more social.
Where is that?
And that's because the industry becomes stronger.
On Independence Square?
We used to meet at downtown club.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And have our annual banquet.
No,
there.
I went to something that meets at a bar, a very Virginia preceded
yes,
me.
Yes.
And they have an annual golf tournament uh-huh. and an annual to get together. But I get invited and some past friends have been invited. And they make an award to the outstanding Philadelphia that's contributed to the progress. And that and it's done still, I believe, at their annual meeting, which is in February or sometime in the winter.
They're still meeting downtown?
They're still headquartered down there. Yeah, they had a paid, my time, a paid secretary that do all the administrative work.
And they met in the evening, did they, or?
The offices, and then lunchtime, whenever they have their quarterly meetings, and their annual meeting was the dinner meeting, golf meeting for out of golf club.
And you, the ACS section was also an evening activity.
ACS, yes, it must have been. There's another one I had to give up.
And you were active enough in that to become chair of it?
No.
No, you're just a member.
Not a Philadelphia section?
No. But
now, about that time, that was later than some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
But with the American Pharmaceutical Association, they had those meetings, and I had my trade meetings, meaning the national meeting, and I had my hands full, but those I gave up for a family.
Yes. Back in the...
It wasn't in writing, but the equivalent of that, Mary Ellen.
Back in the 30s and RORA and National
mm-hmm.
Drug, were they directly competing with you?
Yes. They were in the physician supply, and the American Pharmaceutical Manufacturers was the group that emphasized on the dispensing physician, and the one on the prescription was American Drug Manufacturers. And they had two different secretaries that ran them. One, the American Pharmaceutical was run by a Dunn, D-U-N-N, a lawyer, and the other one, Drug Manufacturers, was Carson Fraley in Washington. One was New York, one was Washington. And we were members of both. Because we were starting to do some business with the prescription side.
So in competing with a RORA, let's say,
mm-hmm.
Where was your competitive advantage? What?
Well, I wouldn't want to go on record on that, but we moved faster than they after the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, and they brought in a young fellow from Smith Kline who reorganized their program after the Herb and Jerry Rohr, and then they merged with the Collegeville French group, Ronfront.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
John Ekman, if you want
yes.
his name.
Yeah.
John. Yeah, he's a close friend. He was on one of my boards.
he was a key in our beginnings. We can talk about
really?
That at lunch. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, John, yeah, I put it on John after... Yeah, well, John had the preliminary discussions with the here and told me. Where's Ron?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But they went that route. Because necessity, just as we had to look at the factors that were evident then and for McNeil. In the meantime, Roar, you say Roar McNeil, they developed a little faster. National Drug was taken over by one of the patent medicine companies, and their name sort of got lost. Their strong for it originally had been vaccines up at Swiftwater. And that Swiftwater plant that's now operating in vaccines was there at the beginning. But there's been so many things since. But now you patients.
Go. When you came back from Yale and went full time into the company, how many? The company didn't have much what we could call professional expertise, but there were consultants or what? I mean, you were called a research chemist. Was there any other research chemist?
Well, that's no. That was simply because I didn't want, at my young age, to pretend to have a big title. I'm not that type. No, we had an excellent control group, which is headed by a Dr. Vanderkleed, who would work up formulas and write the technical material. He's a doctor of pharmacy from Purdue, and a better yet, head of control, Harry Shaw, who was a graduate in chemistry from, must have been the College of Pharmacy. I believe they had an early chemistry course, but yeah, he must be a PCK. And I was invited into the third floor inner sanctum where the vice president head of manufacturing was, who headed all manufacturing. And I set up, my office was a table, conference table, and I started there on labels and a reorganization. As a young squirt who the sales group said, what in the world are you saying if you can't put together iron quinine and strychnine? I had to fight all those, but I told my father that with the law and he couldn't, of course, refute it. And he let me just do that. I didn't even report to him. We had an operating committee and I was in on that, and then we had a board, but the board only met occasionally, but I would go down and indicate the direction of the line.
Was this a board of, this wasn't a board of outsiders, was it?
No. The only three owners ever of McNeil Laboratories, and that was my father, mother, and my brother, and I was the fourth.
So why was there a board at all? What?
Well, it never met.
Okay.
We had to have a board.
Okay.
We had to have an annual meeting. We had to have a book. My mother signed the minutes and...
Yes. What was your relationship with your father in these years again, before and into World War II? I mean, was...
He had utmost...
Fathers and sons don't always get on together perfectly.
He had utmost faith. I look back on it and I'm amazed. He believed everything. He believed anything I said and told others that. And maybe be clumsy in my language and so forth, but I was forthright. I wasn't trying to be mean or cruel, but I said, we've got to do that, and I had to talk to a head of sales and convince him that he was never fully convinced that this young squirt had the answers, but I had enough pharmacology, and I knew where to go to get pharmacology, and I knew where to get my contemporaries, and they became the consultants that you just mentioned, because the companies like Merck could not hire the top people away at that point, because the academic group didn't consider them the equal, as they do today when they take Tabor from Penn, you see. But therefore, I developed a ring of consultants in each field where I could depend on their judgment. And that was agreeable with my father, and I had the best men in the Philadelphia area in each field. And nobody could dispute their word. They would come into the plant, you see, for a meeting, and I'd have a schedule, and the others would join the group, and they'd know ahead of time what we were going to talk about, but we'd talk about the rationale of a mixture, and or a drug, why we would have somebody that was an expert. And, of course, that increased my knowledge and also my interest.
When did you begin hiring chemists and other, you know, scientific experts? And was it a gradual process over time?
Yeah, well, one of them was hired about a year later to start work on formulas, meaning anything new we want to put together, and we had the control side, that was, but we were concerned with incompatibilities and manufacturing. And one of them was Dick Fine, would have been a member of ACS. He was there for several years and then left. But I, of course, also had to go into manufacturing to try out products in a small batch. But I was able to get the cooperation, the manufacturing group, being a part of it. In those days, if you were down on the first floor, it never came up. You weren't held as highly as somebody that had dirt on their hands or were mixing and involved.
I know that sodium butasol was one of your first triumphs. Who would make the approach to Abbott on that?
Well, Dad had made the approach. That was done by him about 1938. It was in there in the wrong dosage.
I remember one time you said that it was he who knew
Fol. Well, it was the same dosage as barbitol, and that was too much based on pharmacologic studies and use scientific development. We changed that and introduced different new tablets, which were beautiful. And that, I gained a point with the sales group by having a tablet that looked better than others. And then the secret of our success was really the development of the elixir, where we incorporated a compound which would hydrolyze in water, and therefore you couldn't make a straight alcohol water mix, but we developed a base which we know divulged that reduce the water content to the point where you could reflux it and it wouldn't break down. And the presence of a low alcoholic elixir on the market for the general practitioner was something new. And that was our key product in the line. Plus, then a few years later, when the pharmacologic properties worked out, we could demonstrate that it was metabolized in the body, and therefore in an overdose the person was out for 36 hours, but he didn't die. Phenobarbital, they died. And that was very important for daytime sedatives in that day. And the modification of the barbiturate to make a seeker barbital, or a seeker lily was a created a very fast-acting drug that left the body sooner, but was not suitable for daytime sedation. So we were the ones that pointed out with the physician the difference. And our marketing niche was the daytime sedation. And that's what took us to become the largest brand barbiturate on the market, gradually. And for 20